A huge weekend ahead, a veritable buffet of goals, highlights and moments to feast on. We've tamed the Lions, swatted away the Crows and we've declawed the Tigers. And now it's time to shoot down the Bombers. Will it be another crazy weekend of footy? Time will tell, and it's in the Swans' hands to make it 4-from-4. We've got the match preview, we'll give you our matchups, key points, predictions and the weekend forecast. I'm Justin and with me is Josh on this Thursday night. It's the Swans Cast Extra, the number one Sydney Swans weekend preview podcast. Josh, thank you so much for coming on again. You came on Monday and now it's Wednesday again.
I was going to say, you've gone forward in time. Yeah, it's Wednesday night. Time flies when you're having fun.
Yeah,
it's all those it's all those match replays you've been watching. You don't know what day it is anymore.
Well, I mean, I could say it's Saturday night and be reliving the replay that I watched on Saturday night, but maybe this is because the Swans have announced a new number one sponsor.
Yeah, okay, I understand, but there are better beers out there.
Well,
leave it at that.
Well, being a Thursday night's a bit of a furphy because it really is Wednesday night, so... Furphy is the new beer sponsor. And there was a little bit of a hiccup as well with the announcement. I don't know if you noticed, but on Twitter, the Sydney Swans put out a tweet and they deleted it about 15 seconds later. They tweeted that they have joined forces with Furphy to be the number one sponsor for the Swans for the season. Then they deleted it and then they put in the number one beer sponsor for the season.
Who did that upset? V-Dub?
I have no idea.
It's not City anymore. It's what's on the back of our jumper? Real estate?
No, that's St Kilda. I think St Kilda got REA, don't they?
Oh, geez, I don't know.
Oh, I should know, but you know.
I probably should. No. All the jumpers I've got have still got City written across the back of them.
QBE and everything.
Yeah, QBE on the back, yep. City on the front or whatever it is. Yep.
I went trying to...
Gee, that's pretty poor. I wouldn't pass a trivia question on that, would I? Bloody hell.
We're supposed to be passionate Swans fans. What are we doing, man?
I'm too busy collecting signatures for mine. I don't look at the backside of them.
I'm too busy spamming Facebook and Instagram.
I just told a lie. I do have one jumper that I look at the back of relatively frequently, and that's the playing list on the back of the 2012 Premiers jumper.
Yes. No, I love it. I love it. I love it. Mm. I tried to dig in the fridge to find myself a Furphy, and the closest thing I could come up with was Strongbow Blossom Rosé Sparkling Apple Cider.
That's horrendous. Well, I had a Fat Yak tonight, and I'd be more than happy to see our guys running with Fat Yak written on their jumpers.
Fat Yak, yeah, that would actually be pretty good. That'd be pretty good, to be honest, especially the Chad running around with Fat Yak on his back.
Fat yeah. Chad.
Come and stop me now.
Oh, bring it.
So, one of the reasons why we said 4-from-4 is not only have we got the first three wins of the season, which is a great start for the season, Josh, but we also have the first three Rising Stars setting a new record. No mm-hmm. team has got three Rising Star nominations in a row in the entirety of the Rising Star since this has been introduced.
Hmm. Yes, and quite frankly, I think it was completely expected he was going to get it this week.
He'd be hard-pressed. The only one I could think of to potentially knock him off would have been Cozzy Pickett from Melbourne, who was... He had a sensational purple patch and he kicked four goals and he was electric for them in the forward line.
Speaking of purple, I just wonder whether Freo Doak has lost his mind that Dave Mundy didn't get a nomination again.
Yeah, well, there you go. He's going... He's what is he, 18 going on 33 and still can't get it?
I don't know. I don't know.
He's 35,
he's mad as a
actually,
cut snake, that guy. Hey?
He's 35, isn't he?
Who? Freo? Mundy, yeah. I don't know.
He's an old bugger, that guy. He's still a good player. He's a ripper.
He's not as good as Nick Suburban was anyway.
Oh, yes. I love Nick Suburban. So, obviously, Errol Goulden, round one. Braden Campbell, round two. And now the Chad, round three. Sensational effort.
Mm-hmm.
He was
and, this week, last week. And this week, it's going to be Logan McDonald.
Yep. Yeah, mm-hmm. And for those of you who are wondering, why can't we get Sam Wicks in? Well, he's already missed the age cutoff. That's it, pure and simple. You got to turn 21 by a certain point in time, and he's passed it, I think, by about 2 months. Yeah. Just like one Dustbin Martin.
Dustbin Martin missed it as well, did he? Oh, didn't know.
Yeah, no, not the Rising Star, but he missed out on Sydney by about 2 months. We would have drafted him if it was about 2 months when he was a teenager. So there's a bit of symmetry between Sam Wicks and Dustbin Martin.
Yep. Yep. Except for Sam. I like Sam's haircut better.
Yeah. Yeah, he was sensational the weekend. Now, Josh Kennedy, he came on, I think it was 3AW in the morning, or SEN, one of those two stations, and he did an interview. There's a really good write-up on Fox Sports about the interview, and how he fell out of, I guess, love with the game, a bit of passion, and then how he's found that passion back with the Young Swans, and he's just loving football life at the moment, and he's fallen in love and with football, and they asked him about whether or not, you know, he's looking forward and aiming for a premiership, and he kind of had a bit of a slip of the tongue for a moment where he's like, well, you know, maybe that's what we're really playing for, and then he went back into, you know, ultra team mode captain, like, oh no, it's a team game. We've got to play for the team.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's not gonna stand there and go, yeah, you betcha, we're going to win it this year.
I really wish he would.
Well, you kind of do wish they'd get all cocky like that on occasion. See, yeah, no, we're going to win this. This will be fine, you know. It's in the bag. But I guess you probably don't want to deal with the relentless ribbing that comes afterwards, you know.
2014 comes to mind.
Yeah, well, yep. 2014 hurts more than 2016 because...
we should have won it. Oh, dead set should have won that one. That was the one that got away.
The one against the Hawks.
Yeah, we dominated that season. We equaled club record 12 wins in a row. And then we played amazing football up until the grand final.
Yeah, demolished North in the prelim and then just sort of didn't show up on the day. Yeah, when you start talking about this stuff, I reckon one of the best quotes getting around is actually by Tom Brady. And if you don't follow NFL... American football, you probably don't know who Tom Brady is, but he's the most winningest quarterback of all time. He's the player who's won the most Super Bowls in history by a long way now. He's got more rings than most franchises have. He's got 7 now, and the next is Pittsburgh and his former team, New England Patriots, with 6 Super Bowl rings. And when he was asked quite a few years ago now, which one's your favorite one? Which one's your favorite Super Bowl? When he said it's the next one. And
yeah.
So my next premiership is the next one.
Yeah, exactly. And I think he retired, didn't he? Didn't he retire and then he came back out of retirement?
No, that was Rob Gronkowski. He was a free agent, went to Tampa Bay in Florida and won a Super Bowl with the new team. So
There you go. The greatest and the best, they can still keep going. And speaking of the greatest and best, time for team changes. Josh, Hayden McLean, expectedly, he makes way.
Completely expected.
That's not to say he didn't play well on the weekend. He had a good game. No doubt about that. No complaints about his game.
No.
We rated him quite highly on player ratings. We thought he did a great job. But who comes in, Josh?
The big Budwar.
Yeah, he just strides in and there is no knocking him out.
Nope. No, and the only other one I think people thought might get a Guernsey, and maybe he's a little bit stiff to miss out, and that's Paddle Bum. James Rowbottom. I think the only person who would come out for him was McInerney. McInerney doesn't deserve to be replaced based on the performance he gave on the weekend. So this is what happens when you've got depth. People can't get in.
Yeah, I might have thought that they might rotate Nick Blakey out for a week. Not so much give him, you know, a run in the reserves or anything like that, but just he kind of looked at times a bit jaded, a bit tired. Give him a rest, bring back Stevenson or Rowbottom or someone like that. And just give the team a bit of a different look.
Yeah.
But you know, the Chad has just been so... he's been so good. The way he's risen to the challenge after Rowbottom's been missing has just been phenomenal.
Yeah, well, hopefully he can stay up there. Did you think that, from what we've seen out of him the last couple of weeks, did you think he was capable of this at the beginning of the year? I think most people would...
No.
I think most people would say they didn't think any of our kids were capable of what they've produced in such a short period of time, but...
I'm going to be honest. I thought Goulden could play. I had this conversation with Stephen Treloar, who was in the first couple of episodes this year, and he's a massive Academy follower, and he follows all the 18s and all the underage competitions, and he's a massive draft person, so he knows how people are going, when they're going to go, who they're going to go to. He said that Campbell's ceiling is way higher than Goulden's, but he said Goulden, he didn't know how much of an impact, but he said he could play round one. He didn't even expect this from Goulden. He didn't expect it from Campbell either.
Yeah.
And he was like, with the Chad, he was like, he's a hard player, but, you know, we'll see what happens. I thought he was, you know, kind of finding his feet in the practice match and not particularly good, but, geez, he has been mighty impressive.
Oh, there's an X factor amongst them, no doubt.
He kind of reminds me that sort of debut couple of matches that Tom Mitchell had.
Yep.
Now, the Chad, obviously, he played last year for a couple of games, got a bit of a taste. He wasn't quite Jack Hiscox level of out of his depth when, I don't know if you watched the Jack Hiscox debut, he played about 50-60% game time. Struggled, would be fair to say. But the Chad, he's come in this year and he's just been phenomenal.
But he did debut last year.
He did, like, yes, he did.
And some of our debutants last year kind of got burned by their debuts as well. And I'm really thinking about McInerney in that one, who just got...
Yeah.
His debut was horrendous.
First or second match? I can't remember which one it was.
His first
match. Might have been the third match of the season after the massive, massive layoff.
Mm.
But yeah.
He didn't have a great... he didn't have a great introduction to AFL football, but certainly the Chad has taken the last three rounds by the, you know, by the horns, and he's just dominating when he's out there.
Yeah, and Longmire's full of praise as well. He said he believed that he could do this. He could see it in the work that he was doing in the hub last year. His commitment in the hub was fantastic. He couldn't wait to let him go and just unleash him, and he's unleashed him, and he's filling, you know, fulfilling his potential. But we could sit here and talk about the Chad for the next half an hour. For those of you who want a dedicated the Chad section, especially Chad Warner, Academy star, Lord Mayor of Sydney page. Yes, we're doing the Chad for you. But we did put out a social media question, Josh. What was our question for our fans this week?
Well, it's pretty simple. Can Essendon stop the Big Budwar?
And we got a couple of responses. It was short notice. We put it out yesterday.
Mm.
So we got a couple ones. We picked a couple of the good ones. Nathan from Facebook, he says, it's not can they stop Buddy. It's can they stop Buddy Heaney, Papley, Parker, Reed, Hickey, McDonald, Warner, Wicks, and Goulden?
Yes. And the answer is no.
And I'm not going to repeat that three times.
No.
what else is next, Josh?
Jonathan from Facebook says, Kale Hooker is very happy to be playing the other end of the ground.
I somehow hope that there's a running chase in there somewhere. That'd be brilliant. And Ethan from Facebook, he said, considering the way they played against St Kilda, I feel like they think they would know how to stop him, but I don't think they can.
Yeah, that's probably more what's going to occur, I think.
Yeah.
I don't think they've got anyone there who matches up well against him.
I guess the only thing that Essendon have in their, I guess, favour or benefit is the fact that he hasn't played mostly for 2 years.
Yeah.
But he showed a lot of mobility against Adelaide, so I wouldn't say he's quite back, but this could be the match where he comes back.
Hmm. Yep.
All right, let's get straight into the preview of the match. We have... I wouldn't say a particularly healthy record recently against Essendon, Josh.
Nope. Which is, I don't think it indicates anything particularly good about Essendon. I think it just indicates how poor we've been over the last couple of years.
Yeah, exactly. And I strongly recommend anyone read that Josh Kennedy article. It's on the blog because it explains to some degree why we've been so poor over the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, we've lost three in a row to them. There was a couple of really close losses. There was a little bit of a blowout in one of them, but...
There was a very close win that still gets raged about now. The great comeback with Gary Rowan kicking a goal after the siren. But I don't like that game at all.
No, we shouldn't have even been in that position. We're up by 6-7 goals.
Oh, but that was almost the choke of the year.
Oh, it would have been the choke of the year. It would have been one of the best comebacks.
I think we're lucky Gary didn't get done for holding the man, quite frankly, on the goal line. I think we probably should have been a penalty the other way, but anyway.
Not going to take that one away. The scores are level. It couldn't have been a draw. It would have been the worst possible result. If there was one team that deserved the win, it was Sydney, but they just took their foot off the throat and Bombers came right back. Which brings us to a bit of history between Sydney and Essendon. Historically, both teams have played some super, super close games.
Mm.
I go back to, I think it was a game maybe 2011, 2012, when, I can't remember the name of the player. Maybe it was Courtney Dempsey. Took a mark about 55 metres out, played on and the siren went.
Yes. I'm almost certain that was Courtney Dempsey. Yep.
Then there was the one I think Adam Goods missed, set shot after the siren or just before the siren.
Yep.
Which was the next year. I think that might have been 2012 or 2013. Roughly around the same time, in that similar sort of time frame. But other than that, we actually have a really good record against Essendon at the SCG in the last 10 years. if you take away that loss that we had, I want to say 2019, but also including that massive win that we had in 2017, the elimination final, we've won 7 of the last 8 matches in the last 10 years at the SCG against the Bombers there, Josh.
Yeah, that 2017 game, that was Essendon's first foray back into finals football in a number of years, and they were clearly out of their depth. Just annihilated. We absolutely annihilated. And then we promptly went and died in the backside 2 weeks later against the Cats at the MCG, and it was very, yeah, very ugly, and we were all very sad after that game was done.
Yeah, we were.
Devastating. But I think at least over the last 10 years, for the most part, we've always matched up well against them in that. We've always had a significant edge in most areas of the ground. And that's with the exception of the last 2 years. And I think, again, I probably can't stress this, if you go and read Josh Kennedy's article, and it sort of talks about the psychology, what was going on with him. And I think you could probably extrapolate that out and see it in some of the other players who are out there as well. They just weren't enjoying themselves. I don't think the Bombers' wins over last year and the year before are as much about Essendon as they were about us.
Yeah, I agree. And it's interesting with that article, like that psychological point of view about Josh Kennedy wasn't particularly enjoying football because they're so used to winning. The psyche of the team is probably affected in the same way. Yep. And it's interesting when you play a lot of sports, when you're winning, your confidence is up. It's a lot easier. Like doing the hard things is just easier. It just comes naturally. But when you're losing, you're trying to find your way back to the winning formula and you're trying too hard. Everything is just a lot harder. It's more exhausting. It's more mentally fatiguing. And in the end, you kind of slip and then you just get to a point where you need a reset point. And for a lot of clubs, it's, you know, they just sort of bottom out and then just wait for the season to end.
Yeah, and then they have, and then some of them will have to turn over their entire playing risk to get rid of the funk that, yep, sort of sets in. And this is one of the narratives of Carlton over the last decade, that they've bred losers.
Yes.
You know, they've redrafted and recruited and traded, and what they've bred is a team of losers where it's almost like close enough is good enough and honourable losses are okay, that they don't have a killer instinct.
Yeah. I guess it's interesting when you look at the noughties. After the salary cap scandal from the mid to late 90s, especially when they won the flag in 1995 and they had a Melbourne Storm-esque second black book of finance that they were doing, mm-hmm, to the players and giving additional payments well on top of what they were actually supposed to have been paid, they suffered for a good decade. Then Brett Ratten brought them close to the finals and back to the finals. Then Mick Malthouse gutted the team, but also kept them close to the finals until his last season when it was a complete disaster. Yep. And you're right, since then, they have been, I don't know, they've kind of been everyone's kind of pity team in a way. Like, oh yeah, you know, honourable, but, you know, not close enough. Ah, they tried. It's kind of like, I guess you could almost say it's kind of like Fitzroy from the 90s when, they're going to lose, but as long as they put in a good effort, yeah, good for them.
Yeah, you could throw pre-2005 Swans in there as well. You know, the Rocket Eid, Ruse, start of Ruse's career as a coach. We sort of had that fairy tale sort of sniff about us as well. But yeah.
Yeah, I know. Well, we've gone off the Swans here big time.
Sorry.
So bringing it all the way back to a Sydney-focused podcast for this one. Obviously, we're undefeated. 3 wins from 3 matches. The Bombers have only won one match. I believe it's only one match.
One win over St Kilda. A convincing win against very poor opposition, though.
Yes, that's the thing, isn't it? Like they were really something quite bad, Josh.
Yep, and that's Lowell Kilda. So for me, that actually makes St Kilda Essendon a little bit dangerous because they've got their tails up. They're coming off the back of an easy win, and you know they'll have this sort of energy and belief that hey, we are actually not as bad as people say we are, and we just demolished this other team. So they're the kind of situation where teams will let their guard down.
And that I guess is a big danger as well because. You go back to the first round, there were about 40-ish points up against Hawthorn. Should have won that match. Completely switched off. And Hawthorn came back in the third quarter and ended up eking out a win in a very tight and closely contested fourth quarter. If Essendon win that, if they run out comprehensive winners in that first round, there is no way we're talking about them in the same way, especially after a St Kilda dropping. We're talking about them as a contender, not a grand final contender, but maybe a bottom edge of the top four, but certainly a finals contender.
Yep.
And a, being a real threat, a very real threat for a lot of teams. Mm. Granted, they would have beaten Hawthorn, who's a slider. They would have beaten St Kilda, who's on the fringe, if not sliding. But, you know, you win those games by 9, 10, 11 goals, people take notice.
Mm. Yeah, I don't think anyone knows what their credentials are at the moment, but yeah. I think they're probably, based on the first three quarters against Hawthorn, their credentials are better than I think people think they are at the moment. I think they're a more competent team than their win-loss record would suggest at the moment.
I wouldn't want to say that adding Parrish to the midfield, Jack Stringer back to the team, and adding some youthers turn these also-rans, you know, two-paced team into this elite, exciting, electric team. I mean, sure, you've got to play well to beat your opponent. But if your opponent doesn't turn up, they're going to make you look a hell of a lot better than you really are. Yep. And St Kilda's effort was non-existent. It wasn't there. It completely wasn't there. Josh, me and you, we could have gone out and kicked 3 goals each. And I don't know about you, but I haven't played football in about 22 years. And I'm certainly not fit enough to play today.
Oh, well, with my bung knee, I probably couldn't kick anything. But but I understand what you're saying. Yep.
Yeah.
You could have gone and grabbed the under-16s team from a country footy club, and they would have put up more. A fight against that St Kilda team from last week.
They would have done more. Like there is some really concerning footage of St Kilda players literally walking after the ball's gone past them.
Yep.
I haven't seen that. I actually haven't seen that before. And despite how bad North Melbourne were, their numbers, overall numbers, weren't bad. It's just their execution was abominable.
Yep.
And Richmond's effort was non-existent, which is a million times worse. And that's why last week and throughout the week, every single, you know, footy-related show has just been nailing them.
Yep.
But again, we've veered way off the topic of the Swans to slam the Saints. But the Swans have scored 100 points 3 weeks in a row for the first time since round 7 and 9, 2017. And I actually had to go and look up some stats for this one, Josh. But the Swans' average score of 121 points per game for the first three rounds is the best since 2001, when we averaged 127 points per game.
Wow.
Now, if we score over 100 again, it's going to go way back. I'm going to have to look through decades of data to try and find something equivalent to when we had this good of a start. If we do score over 100 and if we do win.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's a nice big score. But another interesting one is we scored 121 against Adelaide in round 2. It's our highest score at the SCG since the elimination final against Essendon 2017.
Nice.
So welcome back, Essendon.
Thanks, Essendon.
It's been a great start for us so far, Josh.
It's been amazing, yep.
You know I love me some stats. And there are some really good stats here. I'll read off a couple, but I'll turn the ledger over to you to just give us a couple of things where we are ranked much, much higher than we have been previously for maybe a couple of decades. But scores from turnovers. And I had to go and watch the Crows game for this one. We scored 85 against the Lions, 79 against the Crows, and 88 against the Tigers. We are averaging 85 points per game from turnovers.
It's a phenomenal number, isn't it?
Yeah, it leads the league by some margin, and the differential is absolutely huge.
I'll put it another way. We average more points from turnovers per game so far this year than our average score from all sources was last year.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And we are averaging more points per game than some of the teams, especially like North Melbourne.
Well, it wouldn't be hard.
Well, I don't mean points per game in general, but from turnovers alone.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I think our average last year was 75, and, you know, from all sources, and yep. This year Our scores from turnovers is higher than our average from all sources last year. And I think that's pretty amazing for from one season to the next.
It is.
Unbelievable.
Do you want to give us a list of the stuff that we're ranked number one for currently in the AFL?
So, interestingly, it's a list of things that we would not traditionally be ranked number one in. I'm pretty confident I can say that.
Yeah,
so, we are ranked number one in these categories. Scores from turnovers. Scores from turnover differential. Scores from forward half turnovers. Scores from back half. Scores per inside 50. Now, we may have ranked highly in that in the past, in that we only went inside 50... 45 times, but still, yes. But we're quite accurate once we were in there. But anyway, ranked one in scores per inside 50, pressure post clearance. We're ranked first in goals, ranked first in goal assists, ranked first in marks inside 50, which just makes me laugh because we haven't been able to take a mark in that circle for years.
I'd swear for the last 2 years, we would have been ranked in the bottom four for marks inside 50.
Oh, yeah. And goal efficiency, but I think we've always been up there. It was more that we went inside 50, 35 times a game and were really accurate once we were there.
Yep.
I think that efficiency is probably still, it's a bit higher than normal, but we've always been relatively efficient once we were in there. We just didn't go in there enough.
Yeah, exactly. And on the inside 50s, we're ranked second with more than 60 per game.
Yeah.
We had a differential of 15 against Richmond, which is
so almost double what we've been for the last couple of seasons.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I think in the Richmond game, we were 20 more than even some of our average from last year, I think it was, in just one match, which was ridiculous.
Yep.
But as far as Essendon goes, there are some interesting points from Essendon's perspective, which is where there might be some... I guess maybe some issues during the matchups and some areas where Sydney really have to slow them down. So the Bombers are ranked third for uncontested possessions and they're a fair way ahead of Sydney on this one by about 18 per game, 18 to 20 per game. They are interestingly ranked second for centre clearances ahead of the Swans seventh, differential of about 3 there. And there's a massive differential between tackles between Essendon and Sydney of about 12. They're ranked second with just under 60 per game and Sydney are ranked 15th with 48. But I think that goes to show the way that Sydney's playing in that they're forcing the turnover with pressure and that's why Sydney are ranked number one and by some margin for post-pressure clearance, which is once the ball is moved out of that clearance area, they're able to force turnovers literally all over the ground. Whereas... Yep. Essendon is relying more on a game style that Sydney relied on, I want to say, mid-2010s, which is very much man-on-man, tight contest, tackle, bring the ball to ground, win the clearance, win the contested ball.
Yep, which is what we've been trying to get away from the last couple of years.
Oh, beautifully so, in my opinion. Beautifully so.
Yep.
Now, it is time to move on to matchups, key points, and predictions. I'll kick things off. Josh, for mine, I've got Mills versus Parrish.
You think bringing Parrish in is going to be that much of a game changer for Essendon?
Parrish was a midfielder in his youth, just like Mills was, and he's having a similar impact for Essendon, just like Mills is. Mm. He was basically best on ground last week by some margin.
Yep.
So in this case, I think this is one of those ones where they're going to go head-to-head, and I think the one that has the bigger impact will have the biggest influence on which team wins in this one.
Yep. Yeah, no, that's not a tagging role, and it's not even a negating role. He just needs to run head to head against him. But I think if you take Parrish out of if Mills runs against Parrish and takes him out of the picture a bit, it basically means leaves Heppel as the lone man, as far as I'm concerned. And Heppel's coming back in from has he been off for 1 week?
I'm not quite sure. But in this case, he would certainly get Hewitt as a minder if he goes forward. And same with...
Absolutely.
Same with Stringer. Like, Stringer was massive in the centre clearances last week, so...
Yep.
But I'm not going to
like Stringer better coming out of the centre than I did up forward.
He's dangerous. He's very dangerous.
Well, he looks like he's about 8 kilos lighter than he was last year or the year before.
he's fit, and
he looked like he swallowed a mattress, didn't he? But he's fit and he moves really quick this year. And like I said on the pod a couple of days ago, that he looks like he's got it together this year. And so he's my next matchup. Not in the centre, but if they decide to make him more of a stay-at-home, which we know he can do, he can be a stay-at-home forward. And if that was the case, given his agility, I would think that we would put Dane Rampey on him because Dane Rampey matches up well against him anyway. So
it's interesting. I wonder if the Swans would go a George Hewitt try that thing again where George Hewitt takes him back. And goes forward.
Yeah.
Could be interesting. Key points. Now, Essendon is very strong on clearances. And this also ties in with their uncontested football. They don't take a huge amount of marks, but they do get a lot of balls, so they do use the ball quite a lot, and it stems from clearance domination. My key point is that we've got to prevent that easy clearance winning, especially from the centre clearances. They are completely dominant from centre clearances, ranked second in the competition.
Yep.
Josh? Yep.
My key point, I actually don't have a key point other than just don't do anything differently the last week. They have a few good players in the centre. I don't mind their defence. I'm still a bit iffy on their attack in their forward line, quite frankly. Most of their scoring still comes out of the middle. But I don't think, if we do what we did last week or the week before, I just don't think there's any way that that Essendon can control our spread and our ball movement. That is to say, though, that if we don't prevent easy clearances like your point, we may have issues. But if they can control the amount of clearances they get out of the middle, I don't think Essendon can match our spread around the ground. So my point is, don't change a thing.
Yeah, and Hawthorn were able to get them on uncontested ball and they controlled the ball. That's basically how they got them.
Yeah, and Hawthorn's not particularly speedy either. So
No. So this is an area, if I can speak English tonight, that we can exploit them, and I do expect us to exploit them, but I also expect Essendon to have put in a full week on how to counter that as well.
Yeah, true.
Which brings us to the predictions for the weekend ahead. These are predictions for the Swans match. Mine, I don't know if you want to call it vanilla or not, but
no,
I've gone...
No, this, mate, give the people what they want.
Give the people what they want, and that is the Chad to kick another two goals with a blinder on the run and collect another 20 posies and maintain his perfect, consistent run for three matches, which is two goals, 20 posies, and I think at least four tackles.
Yep, the Chad. Right, Josh, Chad. And I'm going to chuck five clearances on there as well.
Oh, yeah. Well, if he gets five clearances...
It's a massive game for us. What, in a sixth gamer?
Yeah, that'd be a BOG. Clear BOG. Yeah. May you avail us with your prediction, Josh?
No pressure, the Chad.
No pressure at all.
If you think yours is vanilla, mine's not it. Mine's just bad Coles quality vanilla ice cream. And that is a buddy's going to come back and kick five.
I love me some Coles vanilla ice cream, and I love that prediction.
Come out there, and Big Budweiser's going to come out and kick fire sausage rolls and tell all the boys how it's actually done. So that's mine for the week.
I don't mind if he gets five Joe Gooses in the goal square. I'm happy with that.
No, it'd be nice.
I tell you what, if he was able to get one off his chocolate leg, that would be awesome. The way he kicks it on his right boot is it's interesting to watch. It does look a bit cussed at times.
Yeah, we're still waiting to see how this new man on the mark rule is really going to affect Buddy with his goal kicking.
Well, they called play on in the Adelaide game. I hope since then the umpires have had a bit of recalibration to say, no, this guy, that's his normal run up. Don't call play on.
When they call play on him, I don't think they. I think they guessed in advance what he was about to do. I don't think they should have had call on played on him. I'm with you. They got that wrong. They got that wrong. Yep.
And I'm pretty sure the AFL came out and said afterwards, I can't remember what it was, but there is some communication that came out that basically they suggested that it should not have been called play on at that particular point.
Do you reckon the umpires get like in the little umpire room at the end of the like, hey, who's going to be the first one to play call on against Buddy Franklin this season? And then they're all waiting for their turn. Then there's that one guy finally does it. Like, yeah, he finally did an equal play on against Franklin.
And then they're all like, you bloody idiot. You ruined it.
He gets the beer.
Yep. I have no idea. But I reckon if any umpire is going to be a bit of entertainment in there, it's got to be Razor Ray. That guy is he's a character.
Oh, is he officiating this weekend for us?
I have no idea, but I don't mind him. I love him a lot more than Nichols. I can't stand Nichols.
But it's not hard to like someone more than Nichols, though. Bloody hell.
This brings us into our weekend forecast. Unfortunately, there is no mention of Nichols, so sure thing, please, Josh.
Logan McDonald is going to get the Rising Star nomination for this round, and that's going to make Sydney 4-for-4 for the start of the year.
God, if he is able to get that, oh, that'll be something.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, and then, of course, you're going to have Eddie going nuts over the academy that, you know, the Chad and Logan McDonald
can
came
we stay
the
away from
and...
the let's stay away from the academy business at the moment. If you want to see something, go and read my post on the blog about how, you know, we relentlessly shit can Chris Scott for being a serial whiner, because he is.
Yep. He is a serial whiner. Yep.
Yep.
My sure thing is that no one will kick over 10 goals this round. We've had
that is the most vanilla thing you've said all night.
Yeah, but we had two players who kicked 10 plus last round, and Tex Walker's just been exploding every round. If there's any player who's going to get 10, it's Tex Walker.
Yeah, but Josh Bruce beat him there.
Josh Bruce and Harry McKay kicked 10 goals.
No, I can understand Harry McKay. He
kicked three goals over two rounds before then.
Yeah, but he sprayed a few as well.
Still, it's one of those ones where it's just like, oh, geez, once in a lifetime. Give him credit for that. Yeah. Well, look, Tex Walker, he's playing North Melbourne, so my sure thing's already looking pretty shaky.
Might be in trouble then.
In trouble before I even looked at the fixture.
Wow.
It's a bit late to change that one.
Yep.
I think my sure thing's most at stake, but Josh, could you give me your most at stake, please?
This isn't really a most at stake, but I think that if this happens, that this coach is going to start all of a sudden having questions asked about them. And I don't know why I thought this, but I for some reason, I think the Suns are a chance to roll Carlton this weekend. And if the Suns rolled Carlton, there'll be some questions asked about David Teague.
I think fair enough too, because the Suns, like the Giants, have just been decimated by injury.
Yeah, especially... but that was until I found out as well that Witts has done an ACL. I knew he had a knee injury. I didn't realise it was an ACL until we started doing this earlier. So, I'm going to stick with it, but I'm not as confident about it as I was a couple of hours ago.
It's a huge loss for them. It would be like Collingwood losing Brady Grundy.
Well, Witts, you'd have him in your team, wouldn't you?
He's top three, top four ruckman in a league.
Easily.
Easy.
Yep.
My most at stake is...
I like this.
Yeah, well, I mean, every Swan supporter is going to like this, except for those who like the Giants. But the Giants starting the season 0-4. Look, they've had a lot of injuries. They had some more injuries on the weekend. They actually had three injuries on the weekend. Players off varying lengths between 6 to 10 weeks, I think it is, or 8 to 12 weeks. They don't have a particularly easy game coming up either. They got Collingwood at the MCG, then they've got us. So I think after that, they got Geelong and Richmond and Port Adelaide.
Yep.
So they start the season 0-4. They're looking like they're going to start the season really, really poorly, and it's going to be hard for them to get a win with their
injuries. Leon Cameron might be the most under-pressure coach in the comp at the moment, I think. He'd be pretty close to being the most pressured coach.
I wonder if they give him a mulligan just on the fact that that injury list.
Mate, that Ferrari GWS is starting to look a bit like a beaten-up old HQ Holden, you know?
I was thinking more like a Datto on three wheels.
Datto 120.
He's chopped up on bricks.
Datto,
on a,
Datto 120 wine bricks.
Doesn't even have a bonnet or a boot anymore.
Yeah.
Doomsday scenario, Josh, please.
All right, here's one. Port Adelaide redeemed themselves after whatever that was they did on the weekend. They beat the Tigers and much hilarity ensues.
Yeah, I don't mind that one. Look, there's going to be a winner and loser out of that match. The best result would be a draw because just screw them both. My doomsday is St Kilda get pumped by the Eagles.
Well, who would have thought?
Well, see, they've had a couple of bad weeks, but they play the Eagles and they need to redeem themselves and they need to put in a good performance. It's at Marvel. West Coast don't normally play that ground very well. But they are long odds to win this St Kilda.
I think they're gonna just dominate. I know they don't play Marvel very well, but I think the difference between those two is night and day. I think they're just gonna dominate.
But St Kilda, they need to bring something. They need to show that they're learning. If they don't,
My tip is they'll bring it for the first quarter and a bit, and then they'll just fade into obscurity again.
It won't be good enough. It won't be good enough for the pundits, commentators, and all the analysts.
Nope.
All right, Josh. Well, that's the end of a shortened episode. It's a short one because our match is tomorrow night. For those of you who survived through the 40-odd minutes of this podcast, if you do listen to us on Apple Podcasts, please give us a like and a review if you like what we do. Josh, thank you so much for coming on again. It's been an absolute pleasure.
No worries. And maybe see you next week.
Maybe. Cheer the Swans.
Up the Swannies.